Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Canobio, Earthquake Survivor, and Chris Algieri, Eclipse Enjoyer. That's where I'm starting this episode off. For another episode of Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. Chris, I survived an earthquake. I'm just as tough as you. I don't care how many eye sockets you broke. I don't care how many world titles you've won. I'm now on your level of toughness.
Yeah, I mean, I've only survived two earthquakes when I was in Las Vegas and one in California, but they weren't 4.8s. So,
dude, I know this is like kind of old news, and I don't know who I'm sure we have a lot of listeners in the Eastern Tri-State area. That was weird. I'm not from LA. I've never experienced an earthquake
before. Big deal for us. Big deal for us East Coasters.
Big deal. I'm at my kitchen. I'm getting some work done on my kitchen island, and the whole apartment starts shaking. I was like, is this the end? Is this it? And then I ran outside, and typical New York fashion, everyone's in the streets going, yo, you feel that? Yo, I'm looking at my neighbor. He's like, yo, you feel that? And this one guy's like, I told you it was an earthquake. I told you to his boy. He's like, you owe me a coffee. It was the most New York thing for – and then I just
– you owe me a bagel.
Yeah. And that's that. So that was a weird Friday. It was a weird weekend. Didn't have a ton of boxing. We'll break down some of that, what we saw – Saturday night in Las Vegas at the Fountain Blue. But yeah, strange stuff. Got the solar eclipse. Hopefully we survive that. If not, we had a good run. We had a good run here at Inside Boxing Live. It's been almost 300 episodes. So if we don't make it out of these end times that we're in, then yeah, thank you, everyone. And thank you, PPV.com. Thank you to my family. Thank you, Chris, for hopping on this podcast.
I'm going to survive. So, you know, I'll carry on.
Well, you're a survivor, yeah. What are you saying? Yeah. I'm like a week. Like if we were on an island, I would die first.
What can you do? I mean, we don't need podcasting. We don't need podcasting skills and CompuBox on the island.
I can supply moral support. I can supply laughter. I can supply all sorts of those things.
Yeah, I mean that's true.
We start in Las Vegas at the Fountain Blue Resort, where Richardson Hitchens picks up a decision, a controversial decision to Gustavo Limos, who gave him all he can handle. I personally thought Limos won 7-5. I would have been okay with a draw. One judge had it 117-111. I'm not even going to say his name because he doesn't deserve to be named on this great podcast. But damn, Richardson Hitchens was in tough. Damn, he was a little bit exposed. I hate to use that term, but... Dude, what did you see in that fight, and were you shocked that Limos gave Hitchens all that he can handle?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not that shocked because we really haven't seen Richardson Hitchens with someone of this kind of caliber, this kind of ilk. The guy's going to really come forward. He's a banger, two-fisted South American Argentinians. We've seen a ton of these guys over the years, right? These really, really tough guys come forward, two-fisted attack, aggressive, tough, durable. And Limos was all that. And, you know, he had a little bit of craft, too. He wasn't just a banger, but, you know, he knew what he needed to do. He was assertive with his style. He pushed forward. Obviously, the much smaller guy, much, much shorter, didn't look quite as heavy as Richardson Hitchens, but, man, was he a fireplug. He was very, very strong coming forward, had a good game plan on what to do with a taller fighter, got to the inside very, very easily, which I was very surprised. Because Hitchens has a great jab. It's very, very sharp. It's very powerful. But Limos had no problem getting under it, getting inside of it. You know, he slowed down at times, and that's where Hitchens was able to do some damage with the jab. But for the most part, I mean, it was just the all-out pressure from Limos. Yeah, was I surprised? Yes, but not wildly so. Because, then again, we haven't really seen Hitchens at that level with this kind of fighter. But also, I think... Limos himself was a bit of a, a bit of an enigma. We didn't know what he was going to be. We didn't know how good he was. Sometimes these Argentinians are awesome. Sometimes these South American guys are like really, really good. Look at Marcos Maidana. Look at Lucas Matisse. These guys who come up, and yeah, their records are nice. They're sterling, whatever, but they fought a bunch of Argentinians. Then they come up here, and then they actually turn out to be good too. I don't know if Lemos is that kind of guy. He wasn't super impressive, but he did what he needed to do that night. Not enough in the judge's eyes, but I was impressed.
Yeah, I mean, Lemos' stock is sky high. I actually want to see him against some of these other guys at 140. We'll get to that in a second. But just from a numbers standpoint, Lemos outlanded Hitchens in power, 139-74. Not a mathematician, but wow. You know, that's almost 2-1. He threw over 100 more punches. He was more active. The big differential was in the jabs. Almost 60% or 55% of Hitchens' thrown punches were jabs, were on the complete opposite for Lemos was throwing power shots. It was that type of fight where Hitchens was trying to control it with his jab. He was trying to stand and trade more and stand through the fire, which he did. I give him credit for that. But ultimately, I thought he lost the fight. If you know, at worst, a draw, a major step back for him. Because if you think about what's going on at 140 right now, this is a guy who is the IBF mandatory for Subriel Matias. Subriel Matias is now with Matchroom. 140 is red hot right now, and Hitchens wants to put his name in the middle of that mix. Wants to get in there with the Devin Haney's and the Rolly, and the Pitbull Cruises and all the other champions at 140, Teofimo Lopez. Major step back for him. After the fight, they're asking him about Subriel Matias, and he's going, I think I need one more fight. Not a good look for him. A tough one for Hitchens. I was rooting for the kid. But, man, he doesn't have that last thing you're looking for, like that power punch, that last bit that you need to get a guy like Lemos out of there, that elite level. I think he's going to have a hard time against some of the champs out there because he did win, and he is technically a mandatory for Subriel Matias, but, I mean, Matias would have his way with him.
My number one issue is if you're going to be a boxer, listen, I'm a boxer. I was watching that fight. I was struggling to give him enough rounds to be in the fight as a winner. And what was lacking for me was ring generalship. I just did not see that. I did not see any
control. He's a guy that has control. That's his MO.
It is and it isn't. His MO is that he keeps on the outside with his jab. And he's very good at that because he's a very good jab. But then when you got a guy who can get past that jab at times, because he's never had that guy. He's never had a guy who can get past the jab. Now he gets a guy who gets past the jab, and the guy completely dictates where the fight is fought. That's what a ring general is. The fight was fought at the pace, the distance, and at the behest of the Argentinian. And not being able to control that distance, not being able to be a ring general, so when you do get on the inside, being able to, do anything other than just hold and just grab and clinch. That's one thing. Man. If you grab and clinch, you spin, you get back to the center, you get back to jabbing. That's what being a ring general is. Like, listen, I am not against clinching. I did it when I fought too. But I would clinch to get to a position, not clinch to wait for the ref to break us up. I would clinch, spin, roll, boom, back to the outside. That's how you actually utilize an active clinch instead of just clinching and then waiting for the ref to step in. That's when you could lose points. But I'm surprising he didn't, honestly.
He could have easily lost some points. Jab, jab, hold.
Easily.
Jab, jab, hold. You got to stop with the jab, jab, hold, man. It's almost like a plague taking over boxing. It's really the worst style. And
not only was it jab, jab, hold, but it was any time Lemos got close and the guy started throwing punches, it was hold. You can't do that. You can't break the action just to clinch over and over and over again and expect to win these decisions and have the fans like you.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. I mean, we're having the same conversation with Shakur Stevenson, and we talked about it last episode and got some blowback from our community and our listeners where, you got to excite. You have to entertain. It's fine to do this. Like, Hitchens can do this all day. He can jab, he can hold, and he can do that all day long. And Stevenson can do the same thing. He could circle around and not get hit. But are you going to reach your earning potential? Are you going to entertain? Are you going to become a pay-per-view star? No, you're not. So, yeah, Hitchens can do this, and he can get away with his athleticism and maybe a bad scorecard here or there. I don't want to get into the corruption part of the sport, but who knows it when you see a scorecard like that. But you got to entertain. You got to figure out a way not to hold.
What was it, 117, 111?
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
It's criminal.
That's gross. It's gross.
It's criminal. And it gets overshadowed because you look at the 114, 113, and you go, yeah, that's more likely what I saw. And then there's that throwaway line that the broadcast says, and kudos to Sergio and Chris for kind of saying it, like, not kind of. They flat out said, like, that's a horrible, horrible scorecard. You throw that line in there. It's now Sunday, Monday. We forget about it. That judge doesn't even have to talk about it. That judge isn't even seen. That judge evaporates into the night of Las Vegas and doesn't have to do it. Doesn't have to do an interview. Doesn't have to answer to anyone. Gets a nice check and is on to his next assignment. It's the worst part of the sport. The bad judging. And it's one judge, and it's always one, right? And this is exactly why you hear Mauricio Sulaiman trying to trot out six or seven judges. When no, how about just getting good judges? How about getting three good ones, not two and an 11, not two good cards and then one ridiculous? It's always one 118, 110, or 117, 111.
Like, yeah, it's the guy or the girl who literally makes their scorecard before they get to the arena. It's like, yeah, it's always the A side. It's never wide for the underdog. Never wide for the underdog. It's always the A side. It's always super wide for the A side, where everyone like goes, huh, who saw that? It's literally never the underdog. Right. That they're like, wow, look at that crazy scorecard.
Bro, even if it was 117, 111 Lemos, I would be saying that's absurd.
Yeah.
That's nine rounds
to
three.
It was a close fight.
That was not a nine rounds to three fight. Come on, man. Like, that's as bad. And I hate that you even spend time on it. But if you don't spend time on it and you just brush it aside, then
like we always
who's winning
do.
Them? And then who's winning them? Because you're just talking into the abyss right now. I mean, it's just that's what it
is. I mean, ultimately, Dan, we are speaking into the abyss anyway, because this is going to go nowhere. There's no teeth that is going to attack any of these judges and put them in their place.
No, so, never.
That's a whole show. That's a whole show in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So Richardson Hitchens wins. He is now the IBF mandatory or stays the IBF mandatory for Subrio Matias. I don't see him running towards Matias. I see him.
You know, he literally said, I need another fight, which you, dude, if you're in a mandatory position, you pray to get into a mandatory. You pray to get eliminators. You cannot get on the mic afterwards and be like, I need another fight. It's not up to you, bro. that's not how it works.
I was shocked by that because this is a guy that was saying a lot of stuff beforehand. He was saying, I'm stealing money from Eddie Hearn. This is going to be a whitewashing. I'm going to show him he's on the same level. This is a guy that's like begging for the spotlight or like, hey, put me in your discussions at 140. Hey, I'm at 142 and I'm pretty damn good. Afterwards, you know, you got to say, I want Matias. At least say that, you know, and then behind the scenes say, okay, I'm clearly not ready for a Subrio Matias, but Hitchens gets the win, and we move on. Co-main event, Diego Pacheco was in very tough with Sean McCalman. Good call on your part. McCalman was tough. I picked 7 through 12. I should honestly get my money back because it was a 10-round fight. DraftKings had 7 through 12. I want my money back. I'm going to email
DraftKings. On a technicality, I want my money back.
I'm going to email DraftKings and my guy there and say, hey, what the hell? But Pacheco didn't look great. I think you need these types of fights, though. You need a Sean McCallum on your record, a tricky guy, a powerful guy, an elusive guy. Pacheco needs to jab, man. Where is his jab? He's loading up on everything, gets the win. He figures him out. I did think he won the fight. But, man, we took a little bit of a step back, and he poured a little bit of cold water on what was a red-hot contender in Diego Pacheco.
It's the first time he's looked human, honestly. I mean, up until now, he looked like an absolute world beater in every way, shape, and form. And he had someone in front of him. I told you McCallum could fight. I told you he was smart. He's athletic. He's a physically strong guy. He's very confident in himself. He had a good game plan. He's very good at slowing down the pace, which is exactly what you need to do with Pacheco. And, I mean, listen, like you said, I agree with you entirely. Yeah, he needs fights like this. Every guy on their way up needs fights like this. You need to be pushed. You need to see the reason why you need to step up. Because that's the thing. You have to step up every time. Step up, step up, step up. And if you're just having your way with everyone, you're like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But this gives you an idea that, you know what? Got to keep working. And I think that's ultimately going to be a good thing for Pacheco. I think Pacheco is world-class. I do believe he's going to be a world champion. I do believe he's going to be around for a long time. But this is a little bit of a sign to say, hey, man, you got to keep getting better. You got to keep improving. If you want to be the guy that you're supposed to be, get back to the drawing board, but get back to work.
Berlanga tweeted, Pacheco is ass. And I was like, dude, he'd still beat you. He'd still beat you with that performance. Yeah, very aggressive. He'd still beat you. Like you said, super ass. He'd still beat you, Pacheco. I like Pacheco Berlanga. If it means that Pacheco didn't look good, it gets Berlanga to get into the ring with him. That's a real crossroads types of fight that you get at that level. I would be shocked if Berlanga would do that because he still thinks he's in the running for Canelo Alvarez and all that. But that's the latest at 168. That was the fight Saturday night. You also had Scott Nicholson winning a vacant world title and then called out Amanda Serrano once again. Don't think she's getting Amanda Serrano because from what I've seen, Amanda Serrano is potentially fighting Katie Taylor early June, and they're talking about doing it at the Las Vegas Sphere. I love everything about that sentence I just said right there. I love that fight. I don't understand why Serrano didn't go right for the rematch with Taylor and vice versa after their unbelievable fight in April of 2022. I thought it was next June. So when I read that originally, I was blew it off, but apparently it's this June. So I don't think Scott Nicholson gets Serrano. I think Serrano's big game fishing right now. She's going for like the biggest names possible, biggest arenas possible. And Katie Taylor versus Serrano, just like, duh. I mean, that's the easy rematch.
No, she's at legacy money-making fights, Serrano. She's not looking to fight the next up-and-coming, whatever you want to call Sky Nicholson. I don't see that. I don't see that Serrano making that move. She's looking for legacy fights. She's looking for big money fights. Yeah,
it's not bad fight. It's not a bad fight. Sky Nicholson,
it's not, but it does nothing for Serrano. And that's and that's Serrano's point, too. She's like, all right, little kid, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And she's got big opportunities out there. You know, she's, you know, obviously the Katie Taylor fight. I like the Baumgartner fight with Serrano. That's another fight that's very possible. I know Baumgartner is chasing Clarissa Shields.
Tell me you saw their little, like,
of course thing. I did. Yeah, of course.
That was
course.
Some of the cringiest stuff I've ever seen.
I mean, listen, it started on air, which was crazy. You have Clarissa literally calling the fight, and then they interview Baumgartner, and she like calls her out on the air, and then Clarissa has to come back at her while on air, like as a commentator. That's cringy as hell and unprofessional. And then, you know, the whole thing afterwards, just two of them barking at each other back and forth.
Here's the thing, guy. Like, I have no problem with drama.
But people love it. A lot of clicks. A lot of clicks.
I don't know. That's how, well, I was just about to say, do people love it? Because they've been going at each other for a few months now, and no one is blinking. Like, no one is buying it. No one, like, they're separated by multiple weight classes. It's just like, you know, Baumgartner has this, she hasn't really washed away the PED. Yeah. Accusations, and I know she's exonerated.
According to her, she did.
Right, I know she's exonerated and all that, but everyone is just like, nah, I don't know. And Shields is Shields. I mean, she's a lightning rod. I think she's damn good. But yeah, that was weird. And did you also see David Benavidez? Good gracious. They put him on the screen. They interview him. He's drunk as a skunk, bro. Wasted. I thought he had, like, dental issues. I thought he just had a root canal. He couldn't even get the words out. To the point where today he issued like an apology. I'm so sorry, I was drunk.
I can appreciate him being honest.
I know. Like, I was like,
I had a root canal the day before. Sorry,
but no, I have it here. It wasn't even like you know, like some PR thing. It was right from his Instagram, and it was just like very like a fighter. Oh, does he still have it up? Oh, here, I just want to take this time to apologize to all my fans and to the people that seen me last night drunk. I had one too many drinks and made a complete fool of myself, shaking my head, this will never happen again. All right, bro, you got drunk. Who cares? Like, your stock is so high in the boxing world, maybe outside of the Canelo hardcores who think Canelo can do no wrong. Yeah, you got drunk in a fight. Listen, we've all done that. You're a professional boxer. Like, some of the drunkest people I've ever seen are professional boxers. So, I thought that was kind of funny. I just couldn't believe that DAZN, like, or Mannix didn't, like, see his state of mind and then be like, okay, let's not put him on the air. Or maybe his wife maybe could have stepped in and been like, honey, you're a little drunk. I don't think you should go on the air.
Obviously, it should have not happened at all. But at the same time, I appreciate the honesty in the apology, and that just shows you what kind of guy he is. That's impressive. Hey, man, I was drunk. Sorry, everybody.
Fountain Blue. He was hanging out with Oscar earlier in the day. They had a photo op. I would like these Oscar meetings with these fighters that he has zero ties to. Like, what is he saying to them? What is Oscar saying?
He tweeted something like, or he posted it too. He's like, oh, my guy, whatever. Like, yeah. I don't know how really close they are, but listen, it's Oscar, dude. Listen, you're a fighter. I know. I mean, you and I are the same era, but like, Oscar was the man.
I know a lot of these new guys only know him as a promoter, like these younger guys. But, you know, in our era, he was the golden boy. He was the best around for a long time, and he was the golden goose as well. So I think for a lot of these fighters coming up, it's like, that's Oscar, man. He's an idol.
Yeah, so Teofimo went there too. I think you get that call from him, and you don't say no, because that's the one thing Oscar has going for him as a promoter. It's like, listen, you know, I've been there, done that. I've been in the ring. I've been in your shoes, you know, where Eddie Hearn has not, where, you know, Al Heyman has not, where Bob Arum has not. Clearly, Bob Arum is not a boxer. Imagine Bob Arum in the ring with trunks on. That would be.
But even by today's standards, the only fighter who can say they've touched the kind of things that Oscar has done is Canelo. Like, yeah. I think you young guys forget how big of a deal Golden Boy was. Oscar was everything. He was a living legend. He was a god amongst men.
Go watch his documentary on HBO. It's one of the strangest tell all. Take back the curtains. Is that a phrase? No. Open
pull
the
back.
Curtains.
Pull
open
back.
Thank
pull
you,
back.
Thank you.
Pull
back
the
curtains. On Oscar, but it also showed how big he was in the mid 90s, early 2000s. Let's get into what happened at 154. I didn't watch this fight, Curtis. I don't know who this guy is. I'm not gonna lie. I follow boxing like a devout freak, but I don't know Bakram Murlatazliev, but he is now a champion at 154 pounds, a legitimate world champion. He stopped Jack Kolke. That was the IBF crown that was vacated by Jermell Charlo. The guy was been a number one contender for like 5 years. He took, I think, 6 or 7 step-aside fees. Finally found a guy that maybe I could beat. I think I could beat Jack Kolke. I'm going to not take a step-aside fee. And I'm going to fight for a vacant title. Happy for Main Events. They have a piece of Murlatazliev. Happy for Kathy Duva and everyone at Main Events. They are awesome. But now at 154, this guy's in the mix. Like, he's got a world title. Like, if someone wants to become undisputed at 154, whether it's Fundora or whether it's Madrimov, they're going to fight Murlatazliev.
Yeah, I don't know him. And I look like I've met him. He looks familiar. I know I've met him either at fights or somewhere along my travels, but have never seen him fight. But I know Jack Kolke is really, really tough. And for him to stop him, even at this stage of Jack Kolke's career, it's like this kid has to be able to fight.
Yeah.
So, and even by looking at the scorecards, like you said, I didn't watch it either. He was way ahead.
You couldn't watch it if you wanted to. It was like impossible to find. One of these lunatics on Twitter found a link to it, and I skimmed through it. So
actually, no, he wasn't way ahead. I'm sorry. He was split.
Yeah.
But he was way ahead on one scorecard. But he was winning the fight and then stopped him in the 11th. So, you know, listen, the guy can obviously fight.
Yeah,
54 is kind of a weird division now.
Bro, that's why I wanted to give an update, because we didn't talk about it on our last show, like what's going on with 54. So the latest is Sebastian Fundora has the two belts, right? He just beat Tim Zhu. But he has a broken nose, and he can't fight until September at the earliest.
We interviewed Samson on ProBox TV. He said November.
Okay.
He said he won't be fighting till November.
All right, makes sense. I mean, these guys fight twice a year.
For a broken nose, I don't understand.
But it doesn't matter. Even if he was healthy, he's fighting in November because of just the schedule of these guys fight. So Fundora has got the two belts, broken nose, not fighting till November. There was a big thing about the rematch clause, verbal rematch clause. Spence gets into the ring. Fundora, Spence seems like the thing. Then Samson goes, you know what? I'm a man of my word. We shook hands. Who am I without my word? All I have is my balls and my word. He didn't say that last part. I made that up. And then Tim Zhu says, you know, we'll have a rematch at the end of the year. Zhu's getting over the cut. So that's like as of right now. I still don't believe it whatsoever. A handshake agreement means nothing to me. I don't care what you say, Samson. If they offer Spence and a boatload of cash in November, that's the fight. He didn't say when, or Crawford. They didn't say when the rematch would be. They said, yeah, we'll give you a rematch. It could be after Spence. It could be 2 years from now. It could be 10 years
from now. That's the key there, Dan. You're a smart guy.
I figured it out finally. It could be way down the line. And that's the part, you know, not to rehash how silly Team Zhu is. Yeah, that's the latest with that. And then Spence is in the mix. And then I heard a rumor. I saw it on Twitter. It's got to be true.
Got to be.
Terrence Crawford potentially fighting Israel Madrimov, who is the WBA, one of the champions at 154 in Saudi Arabia.
So when we first spoke about this, I was like, "What? Who cares? Oh, money." I was like, why would this fight? Oh yeah, money.
Well, money, and it's also a title.
Yep.
It's also a really not an easy fight. Madrimov is really
not
good.
An easy fight at all. Yeah.
Madrimov is really, really good. Crawford is really, really good. I saw Crawford's agent, who I met earlier this year in MSG at the Top Rank fight. His name is Ish Hinson. Awesome guy. A real star in the sports agency. He works with CAA. He negotiated the fight with Crawford and Spence. Guy's cool as hell. I saw him last night sitting next to Eddie Hearn in Las Vegas. Who's Eddie Hearn promote?
Madrimov.
Yes. I'm not mad at that fight. Like I would. Crawford's like the odd man out at 154. He's obviously not going to fight Fundora. We're not going to wait for Crawford to fight until November. That would be, I mean, I'm sure Crawford would love to wait till November. But Crawford, Madrimov in Saudi with a title on the line. Crawford wins that. He's got a piece of the 154. I don't hate Crawford Madrimov at all. Just like you said, yeah, it is just weird. Like never in a million years did I think that that would be a fight. But the more you think about it and you peel it back, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially when you walk it out like that, it does make sense. I mean, you got Saudi money, you've got a title opportunity, you've got the other title list is out until November. And listen, Terrence Crawford, say what you will, Father Time is ticking. And it doesn't stop ticking. So yeah, he's got to get active. He's got to get busy. It's coming up on a year since he fought. So yeah, he's got to get busy. He's got to make some moves. So this looks like it's going to be the next move. And when you really look past it, it does make sense.
Yeah, it's a move. And Crawford will be active. And I always love watching Crawford fight. But the thing though with Saudi is they very rarely do one-off deals. So does that mean Crawford is going to fight a few times in Saudi Arabia? I would not be shocked. That guy is cashing in now in the later part of his career.
Win, lose, or draw, they bring everybody back. So whoever they actually bring into the fold, they fight.
Yeah, everyone gets a piece of that pie. I want a piece of that pie. Let's get into 135 pounds. We're gonna we did a fun little thing last week where we did a deep dive into 140. Everyone seemed to like it. Got a request from one of our listeners. Hey, why don't you do one into 135? But also added a little wrinkle. I put a form out on social media, a questionnaire. Thank you to everyone who filled it out about the lightweight division. And we're going to go through it right now, Chris. 135 is one of the better divisions in boxing. It's not the best division because that
it was recently.
It was the most promising division for a while. It was the best division for a while. But a couple guys have moved up. A couple guys have gotten old. A couple guys at 135 aren't giving us the fights that we want to see. I'm talking about you, Tank Davis. But let's get into it. The champions are Javonta Davis, WBA champion. That happened end of last year. WBC champion, Shakur Stevenson. The IBF champion is vacant, but Lomachenko and Kambosos are fighting May 12th in Australia to settle that. The WBO is also vacant from Devin Haney, and that's going to be settled by Emmanuel Navarrete and Baranchik. So that's the champions. Now, who is the best at 135 pounds? According to our community, 44% say Javonta Davis, 37% say Shakur Stevenson. To me, yes, Javonta Davis is the cream of the crop at 135.
Interesting to hear the fans speak. But
what are you trying to say, Chris?
Are we going to see Javonta? I'm not even talking about the fans. Fans, cool. I like where you guys your heads are at. I'm posing a question. Does it take Javonta out of the mix because you're not going to see him fight anybody? Like, it's looking more and more like we're never going to see him fight anyone.
I disagree.
That we want. I know. You and I go back and forth on this.
Yes, we butt heads on this. It's fine.
Listen, walks like a duck, talks like a duck, you know, looks like a duck. You know, it's a duck. The guy does not fight anybody that – listen, it's got to be on his side of the street, like the Frank Martin fight. It's got to be, you know, I don't know. It's got to be a Ryan Garcia type because it doesn't look like he's
there to make the fights that the fans want to see. I mean, he's not getting younger. So
I mean, he's not 30 yet, he's 28. But I know what you're saying. There's
if you haven't done it at this point, he's been at the top for how many years?
I know. There's a stack of evidence to support your case. I'm not even saying that you're wrong. It's right there in front of our eyes. It's pretty damn cut and dry. He hasn't given us the fights that we're exactly clamoring for. He's given us some good fights. He's given us some great knockouts. He's given us some opponents.
Roy Jones Jr. is not during his prime was he didn't have anybody to fight. And he fought all the guys that are around him. And you have to tip your hat to him. He would have prayed for an opportunity like Tank Davis does. Okay. Tank Davis has been surrounded by guys that he could fight to make legacy type fights, huge money.
He could have fought Lomachenko.
And weaves through all of them. Weaves through all of them.
I get it. But I truly believe, and I'm basing this off of nothing. I'm basing this off of how Floyd moved his
career.
Basing it off of how Floyd moved his career, basing it off of some, you know, tea leaves and some things I've heard from LRB and some things I've heard from PBC people is that this has all been calculated to get to this point. I don't want to spend too much time on this because we just had this very same conversation a few episodes ago. I do think he will fight the bigger names because you just can't find any more of these guys for the next 5-6 years. He's 28 years old. He's got five good years left in him. Twice a year, that's 10 fights. I don't think you can find, no offense to Frank Martin, the Frank Martins of the world 9 more times after this. I think he's at the point where he's going to cash in now, and that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. The evidence is there that he hasn't fought anyone yet, but damn, there's a lot of opponents for him to fight. But I think
I'm saying cash out. I'm saying that they're looking at it's going to be less than 5 years. I'm saying that they're trying to ride this undefeated streak for as long as they can, and then when it's about time to get out, kind of like the Charlos, similar thing. I mean, willing to sell them out, they can fight whoever now.
Yeah.
Now they can fight anybody, and they're going to make big, massive money.
I don't know. I agree. Like he could fight literally anyone, and it's going to sell out, and it's going to be a $20 million gate. It's unbelievably impressive. The fans that show up,
he's a fun fighter. We all love him when he fights. So
I would favor him over all these guys. That's the thing. Like, and you know, earlier on a couple years ago, I was getting flack from everyone on social media because I didn't exactly know if he was the real deal or not. He is the real deal. Like he can.
We've been pretty.
I'm talking like pre you hopping on this podcast, like I had one clumsy tweet a while back that like these freaking guys just bring up all the time, and LRB got on me, and LRB had a 2-year beef. Man, like I just didn't know if Davis was elite yet. This was 3 years ago. I just questioned it, and he is.
We've been very positive about him on our show.
Right.
And aside from even his skill set, just how funny he is to watch, and he's awesome.
He's absolutely amazing. He's amazing. His fights are events. June 22nd is supposed to be in Houston, Texas, against Frank Martin. Going to be electric.
Which I like. I like that fight. I do like that fight.
Yeah. So let me give you my top five at 135 pounds. I have Tank Davis, number one. I got Shakur Stevenson, number two. I have hard-punching Mexican star William Zepeda at number three. At number four, out of respect, and just the fact that there isn't a lot of big names at 135 anymore, Vasily Lomachenko. And rounding out my top five, this was a tough one for me. I was going through a few of the names, but I'm going with Frank Martin just because I think he's done a little bit more than some of the other names at 135. What's your top five at 135?
Number one, I got Shakur, because at the end of the day,
over
when
Tank.
Yes, because he beats him.
He beats Tank.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the best version of Shakur beats Tank. And number two is Tank. Very, very close. But listen, we're splitting hairs. But I got Shakur over Tank. I think stylistically, I think it's a boring fight. I don't think a lot of punches get thrown. But at the end of the day, I think Shakur is able to minimize the offense of Tank long enough to win the fight. Number three. I think I'm gonna go still, even though he's an old man, quote unquote. You know, I like the old guys. I'm going Lomachenko.
Okay.
Number four, Zepeda, and number five, I'm going Raymond Moritaya.
That's who I was debating on five.
Yeah, even though he didn't look great last time out. He had a tough night, but I think he is exceptional. He also wasn't fighting at his weight class. He was fighting up
I think a 37 or something like that, just to make the fight or whatever. So I think at his weight class, I think when he's in his own weight class, which is 135, I think he is very, very talented. He's got a long way to go. He had a tough night. So what? You're supposed to have fights like that. He hasn't had one in a while, so it's good on him. But yeah, Frank Martin's right there. Keyshawn Davis is right there as well. I think he'd be just outside the top five. Mm-hmm. I think he is a really, really fantastic future star. But yeah, I'm going Shakur, Davis, Loma, Zepeda, Morataya.
Like it. Like that list a lot.
Good weight class. It's a very, very solid weight class, and you can mix around a lot of those guys, and it's still very a very good.
Right. You have star power at the top. You have star power at the top. You have elite at the top. You have William Zepeda, who is in a class
super
of
fun.
His own, class of his own.
Super fun.
Yeah, and you got the grizzled vet in Lomachenko. You got the upcoming guys in Andy Cruz and Keyshawn Davis.
Oh, I forgot about Andy Cruz. Andy Cruz is excellent.
We'll get to him in a second. Raymond Murataya. There's a lot of names in this division, and you got Kambosos in there too, even though I think he's going to get waxed by Lomachenko.
Yeah, I think at this point he's more of a namesake, and I don't think he's got that much left in him, honestly.
And then you also have Emmanuel Navarrete, but I don't really look at him as a lightweight just yet. I got to see how he looks against Baranchuk on May 18th.
I can't have him. I couldn't even have him in the top 10, honestly, until I see him there.
Fun?
This is what, fourth weight class, third weight class?
Yeah.
And he was looking small at 30, so I don't know how he's going to look at 35.
Yeah, so we'll get into – that's our top five. We'll get into what the best matchup is. Now, obviously, 63% of our – listeners said Tank versus Shakur is the best matchup, even though, like you said, it could be a dud because Tank throws under 30 punches a round. Shakur is a defensive first fighter, could be staring at each other for the first 5-6 rounds. But that's the fight that I think would be electric in terms of power punching, most accurate power puncher versus the sport's best defender in Shakur Stevenson. I don't think we get it anytime soon unless Shakur leaves Top Rank and comes to PBC. And then we can build towards that next year. But Tank Davis versus Shakur Stevenson, man, that would be something to watch.
I like, and this might be a weird pick, I like Shakur and Lomachenko. I think the tactical technicians, and as much as Shakur tends to slow fights down, Loma speeds them up. And I think that their dynamic would be interesting. And also Loma, aging champion, right? Aging fighter. Things change, you get older. You kind of have to fight more. You have to push more. It happened to me in my career. I had to be more aggressive. I had to be more of a stalker. And you're seeing that Lomachenko, like with that Devin Haney fight, he became much more of a stalker move forward type guy. And I think he'd try to do the same thing with Shakur because he pushes the pace. He wants to get up. So he can take advantage with his awkwardness and his virtuoso style. I like that fight. I think that would be the fight where we would see the best version of Shakur, where he'd be forced to fight and pushed beyond a limit that he's ever been pushed.
And I think that could happen.
Yeah, like, absolutely. This fight could happen.
This fight could happen at the end of the year. Like, yes. I know the Top Rank is kind of controls the 135 division right now. The two vacant title fights have to play out. It's either going to be Navarrete versus Lomachenko if they win, or it's
I don't know
be,
who wants to see that.
Or it's going to be Navarrete versus Shakur, or it's going to be Lomachenko versus Shakur.
What do you think about this fight? Zepeda Davis.
That got 7% of our vote, which was, 63% of it went to Tank Shakur. So some of it had to be splintered out. Tank versus Zepeda would be crazy.
Dude, because I think about, because I watched it the other day getting ready for the Rollies fight. I watched Rollie Tank. And Rollie's physicality gave Tank issues, and it made him kind of button up, keep his gun holstered, and look for the openings. And Zepeda, way better fighter than Rollie's in every way, and throws way more punches. I think he hits harder. I think he's more durable. I think it's a fun fight.
Yeah, it would be awesome. I mean, I don't. Once again, this fantasy world we're living in with these fights, but. Technically, Zepeda is the WBA number one ranked fighter, or mandatory for Tank's title, even though Tank has never once fought a mandatory, and that's the biggest reason why he doesn't like belts, because he doesn't want to fight mandatories. So he wants to figure out the biggest event to be made. But yeah, that would be a sick fight. 15% want to see Tank versus Loma. That was a dream fight for years. It started in like 2017 when Lomachenko was still at the height of his powers. and Tank won his first title off of Jose Cepeda, and we were starting to understand who Jose Pedraza, and we were started to understand who Tank was. That this guy is the real deal. This guy's power puncher. Put him in there with the technician of Lomachenko. We're now in 2024. The fight hasn't happened, and I don't see it happening anytime soon. That would be a fun one. But, yeah, there's a lot of mixing and matching. You could do Loma, Shakur. We'd probably get that fight. Tank, Cepeda, 7%. Any of these matchups at 135, we would gladly take as fight fans. Who is the wild card of 135? This is interesting because I only put three options. I put Andy Cruz, Keyshawn Davis, Raymond Morataya. These are the names that were not in our top five. These are the names that aren't, you don't exactly list off when you think of lightweight. 60% of our community says Andy Cruz is the wild card of the lightweight division. And I agree. The
guy, we have very, very smart listeners.
That's awesome. I agree. 60%, 26% say Keyshawn Davis.
Yep.
15% say Raymond Morataya. Yeah. Andy Cruz, you put him in there with any of these guys, he's giving them hell.
I agree. Andy Cruz is the guy. As soon as you said that, who's the wild card? I said Andy Cruz. I think we've seen the least of him. Obviously, we've seen the least of him as a pro. But I think his boxing IQ is on such a high level already, even for even a pro level. We just don't know. And that's what a wild card is all about. So I think our fans are sharp, man. Our listeners are sharp. I am super impressed with you guys. Well done. Well done.
Yeah, this is really cool. This is something we're going to keep doing every weight class. Now that we got this questionnaire, adds a whole new wrinkle to it. It's not just us flapping our gums. We get our listeners in there and get their thoughts too. Lastly, I asked who will be the top dog in 3 years. Now, I messed up. I should have put one of the guys. I should have put either Shakur or Tank in there just to be like, all right, they're going to stay at 135. Maybe they'll fight each other and one will reign supreme. But I put Andy Cruz, Davis, Morataya, the same thing as the wild card. And this is who will be the top dog in 3 years. And 56% say Andy Cruz, 40% say Keyshawn Davis. So our listeners at least think that Andy Cruz has a little bit more than Keyshawn Davis. And that's the debate that's starting to form. You know, there's always got to be the next big fight at 135 or 140. You know, you build up between two guys that are just kind of at the same level, just starting their careers. And that's Andy Cruz and Keyshawn Davis. They fought in the amateurs in the gold medal bout, so they have that history. Keyshawn Davis fights like a professional fighter. He fights different. He has a different style than Andy Cruz, which makes it even more exciting. And then Davis coming off of that win over Pedraza. Yeah, Pedraza's a little long in the tooth, but he stopped him, and he didn't even play around with them. And Cruz is going the distance with guys, and Cruz is showing that kind of amateur style. So this is the next one. This is the next one we're all going to build towards, is Cruz and Davis.
Yeah, and I also those two guys, I don't see them or either one of them outgrowing the weight class anytime soon. I think they're 35-pounders. It's not like – it's hard to say who's going to be so-and-so in 3 or 5 years or whatever, because so many guys skip weight class, especially 35. It just seems like it's a weight class that people don't spend a lot of time at. But I think the two of them – just from body size and where they're at, I think they're both going to be there. I think, yeah, in 3 years, those are going to be the guys. And I think they're building towards a huge fight in the next couple of years. And I'm here for it. I mean, I think their boxing IQ gets better as they go in the pros. And really great point, Dan, about Keyshawn, the way he fights as a pro now versus how Andy Cruz is fighting. But again, Cruz, what is he at? This is two pro fights?
Three or four, maybe.
So definitely these guys are moving very, very fast in the pro ranks. And I think their development, we're going to see a lot of their development in the next couple of years. But yeah, those two meeting down the line, I mean, it's so far off because we got so much to do every year. So much happened. But I think that's a really, really interesting future fight to think about. And again, good job with the fans, man. These guys rock.
Yeah, good job, everyone out there. Thank you for filling this out. It's a healthy division. But now that we've spent some time talking about it, it's got a lot of names at the top. It's got these up-and-comers at the bottom that we want to see eventually fight. It's got great role players. It's got, you know, the legendary fighters like Lomachenko. And you throw in some fun fighters like Cepeda. I mean, this is a really, really fun division. The titles have opened up a little bit because of Devin Haney vacating those belts. We're going to see get a lot of answers, I should say, towards the next couple of months, because two of the belts will be figured out, and that's the IBF belt and the WBO belt. And then you have Gervonta with one title, and you have Shakur with the other one. So
Quick question. When do we stop looking at Cepeda as not just being a fun guy and being a really dangerous top guy?
Because
he's really looking mad. He's looking more and more like he's elite.
Dude, I think he could easily be a wild card. I should have put him in that list.
Yeah, I agree. I think that last fight was really impressive. Maxi Hughes is a tough out, and he's got a lot of experience against good guys, and has never been dominated the way that he was by Zepeda. Zepeda's something else, man. I know stylistically he seems like he's a kind of a one-dimensional guy, but I think that was a question that I posed going into the Maxi Hughes fight. It's like, yeah, you can't just be a one-dimensional guy and deal with a guy like Maxi Hughes. You've got to be able to close that distance in a certain way and have some IQ behind it to get in on a guy like that. And he did, and he had no problem doing it. So I think it shows that that fight especially shows he's a lot better than maybe initially we thought or we've been mentioning. But yeah, no, he's entering that top elite level in a very good weight class. I'm really curious to see how he pans out the next couple fights.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think when you think of him, you think of a lot of punches, and when you think of a lot of punches, you think of a brawler. But he
a lot
is
of
so
holes, a lot
that.
Of openings. Yeah, no.
Yeah, he's so much more than that. He's legit, and I think that all the fans, boxing fans, saw that in that last fight. He's definitely the most exciting at 135. If we had that category for you, he's pure excitement. He's entered the must watch territory. William Cepeda, it's awesome. I think boxing needs.
Yeah, I think he was on our most exciting fighters. Yeah, he was on our most exciting list. I think across the board, he would be that guy.
Yep. All right, that's our show this for this early portion of the week. We'll have another show later on in the week to preview Jared Anderson, top rank has a card this weekend. We'll talk about the heavyweight division. It'll give us a look at the Jared Anderson's mindset. Coming off of some crazy legal issues, is he still the guy? Is he still the man at 135? 135 is on my mind. Is he still the guy at heavyweight?
He hasn't been 135 since he was 11 years old.
Yeah, I think he came out of the womb at 135. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, everybody. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Let's survive an eclipse, and we'll see you later in the week.